Welcome to the road to growth, success of an entrepreneur.
We've raised the bar.
Learn firsthand from successful business owners and create your own path to success.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
It's time to hit the road to growth with team lead of the Enriquez Group, Realtor Vinny.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Thank you very much.
So can you talk a little more before we kind of get into your guys' story, more about the Carlin Group? Like, what does that kind of entail? What does that look like for you guys?
Well, the Carlin Group now is we're an international company. We are actually we're from the UK originally. We started our journey, if you like, from there, our entrepreneurial journey in the UK. We're now based in Dubai, and we're doing business in the UAE, Europe, and the US. So the Carlin Group is an international investment business looking at opportunities, you know, throughout there.
So you said you started in the UK, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because I know your background, I think both your background, right, was in entrepreneurship, right?
No, I mean, we both quit our jobs in 2007, just right at the height of the financial market crash,
yeah,
and started buying real estate. Before that, we were employees of a company, which is where we met. So we were, if you like, destined to be run our own business and entrepreneurs. But it took us a while kind of to get there. We've worked in mainstream employment prior to quitting our jobs and starting our own businesses.
The reason kind of why I ask, I mean, I guess it's, I know you're now kind of helping businesses get to that next level. I mean, I've had different people from Europe on this platform, in the UK and in a variety of different communities. And the idea of entrepreneurship is kind of, or at least in the past, has been looked down upon. What's your perception of it currently?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends, really. It depends where you are. Certainly, I think currently it's, I don't know what they mean by that.
Well, more so that it was like the idea, it was a more of kind of a older way of looking at business, right? In the US, okay, you want to start the goal, the dream, that kind of stuff, where at least the people that I've had on here, they've talked more so about the idea that a lot of the older generation kind of said, what are you doing? You're basically risking this all to do this. You need to find a strong company, kind of like just like the older way, I guess, of looking at it. And it's only recently over the last 10 years or so, 15 years, where you're actually seeing, hey, you got to make take that chance, I guess.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about it. You know, the UK, in terms of that mentality in relation to entrepreneurship and go and do something yourself, you know, is miles behind. I mean, the conversations you have, the conversations we have, it's far easier to do business in the US than it is in Europe. But it's not to say that the business isn't being done and there aren't some great entrepreneurs in the UK and Europe, of course. But I get what they're saying there with that. It's a bit more of a
mindset.
Yeah, mindset. It's a more difficult conversation in comparison to the US.
Gotcha. So are most of the businesses that you're working with, are they, because I think on your website, they usually try to have an exit strategy for like 3 to 5 years. So are most of the businesses more established, or are they most of them more like newer, relatively newer?
We look for more established businesses.
Okay.
And we can always simplify the terminology. So if you think of skinny cows, medium cows, and fat cows, we're always looking for a medium cow.
Okay.
That you can, you know, work on and fatten it up, but we don't really tend to go for skinny cows or startups.
So
it's more well-established, well-run, well-managed businesses.
And using your analogy to get the medium cow to the fat cow, is it usually a common theme where it's technology, maybe social media, or something that they're missing that you guys can tell that, hey, this is what they're would take them to the next level? Is there a common theme?
It's usually a whole host of what you've just said there. So, you know, do they even have a website? How good is their website? How good is their marketing? You know, if there's suppliers involved, are they getting the best deals? There's a whole host of reasons or ways to beef up.
And there, I've had, again, other people in your kind of sector, I guess. And I think the last person I had on here, they said that it's usually about 1,000 different companies that they're talking to or looking at that's going to actually make one company that they're actually going to want to partner up with. Is that kind of the number you see, or what does that look like for you guys?
Well, I think that's ridiculous, these stats. I'll be honest with you. If you're only buying 1 in 1,000, you know, maybe I would see even a tenth of that. It's pretty similar in the business acquisitions as it was in the property business when we were buying properties. Hmm. You know, you'd maybe look at, you know, 100. The stats at the time we were told was 1 in 100, but in actual fact, we were 1 in around 20. You know, if you get your marketing, your pipeline, your connections, and your strict criteria right, why waste your time looking at 1,000? So it takes a bit of work in order to do that. But 1 in 1,000, I think, pretty grim. You know, how would you ever get there?
I think Graham hit the nail on the head there about the criteria. We're very strict on our criteria, so that narrows that funnel down. So it saves you looking at the 900 that you would never buy anyway. You know, so right away, you know that that doesn't fit our criteria. You don't even touch it.
So do the individuals that are reaching out to you, or are you reaching out to individuals, or what does that usually look like?
Yeah, there's a whole host there. I mean, we have many ways of connecting. So we do outreach. You know, we are hunters. So we go hunting. We go looking for businesses that are not on the market, but we've identified as being a business that really suits our model and we think we can add value to. So we knock on a lot of doors. We are open, we're visible on social media and all over the place. So, and we tell people, you know, we're in the business of buying businesses. So it's both outward and inward. We are hugely active, and that's where most of our time spent is on talking and looking for opportunities.
So the criteria that you guys spoke about is, because I guess it'd be relatively easier if you're doing the hunting, right? Because you know the criteria, which ones to go after. The times that where you're being, I guess, the hunted, right? On that, do you go over the criteria, or do you, hey, this is the criteria we're looking for. Make sure that you're actually, you fit this criteria. If you don't, we're not going to be interested. How does that usually work?
Yeah, well, that's correct. I mean, we get a number of inquiries, and it's daily because we're active in a lot of countries. So I think what happens is when a lot of people are starting out in this sector, they try and, you know, because they've maybe got a lack of deals or their deal flow or pipeline isn't that great, they spend too much time on trying to make deals that don't fit the criteria. You know, we're all creative. You try and make deals work that really don't work. And that's due to a lack of deal flow. So for us, we focus on deal flow and very quickly, that's our criteria. Does it work or not? Next. You know, it doesn't work. Next. We're on to the next one. But a lot of people are starved of deal flow, so they're trying to think it through and work it out and all that stuff. It really is pretty straightforward once you build up enough deal flow. It either fits or doesn't fit. And we've been guilty of that in the past, and when we were starting out, you know, trying to fit a square peg in a round hole and all that stuff to get a deal done and convince ourselves that, you know, it was a good deal when it wasn't. And we've made some errors in the past and learned our lesson. So we're now, you know, 15, 16 years down the road, we're a lot more versed and being tougher with our criteria.
Yeah, you know, that's funny because you said 2007 is when you kind of started some of the stuff. And 15 years, it took me a second to go, oh, yeah, that has been 15 years. Time flies,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it
does. Yeah. All right, so let's rewind, I guess, to when you first started. So you were in the corporate world. You guys had real estate holdings that were separate from the corporate world. What did it look like for the transition to start the Carling Group, and what was that kind of push to get there?
Okay, well, we didn't have any real estate holdings when we started. We had nothing, zero. We'd only just bought our first personal, our home, our house for ourselves. But other than that, there were no rental properties or investment properties at that time. If we sort of rewind it back, I'd started and had three failed businesses, smaller businesses, back in the early 2000s. They didn't work out for various reasons. And I went back to mainstream employment, and it was around 2002, I caught the tail end of an Oprah Winfrey show, and it was Robert Kiyosaki. I just went back working. Robert Kiyosaki was promoting his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I had been back in mainstream employment. I had no money. I was skint. I'd lost all my money in my businesses, and you know, I was in a kind of bad place in that respect. So it took from 2002, and I just read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and everything else that I could. I needed to become financially educated. So it took me from 2002 to October 2007 to kind of, you know, I recovered financially. I was confident enough to go back into working for myself. And I'd met Leanne during this time, and she'll tell you the story about how we met and all that stuff. But it took, then the opportunity presented itself when everyone was getting out of the property market. It was a good time to get in. So the numbers started to make sense. We can buy properties at a discount. So that's a very quick version of it. But, you know, it had, you know, that's where kind of we started together in our investment journey. And here we are.
Was that a time, because I think I read it somewhere in the bio or somewhere, that when Leanne joined you at the, some business, you guys were just boyfriend and girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
So were you buying properties as boyfriend and girlfriend, or is it married at the time? Okay.
No. Oh. Before we were married, yeah, we bought a couple of properties, but we'd met, as Graham said, he had been, you know, studying the real estate market. He'd seen the Oprah Winfrey show. He'd been reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And when I met Graham, he introduced me to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Rich Woman, and then I started my financial education journey. And then, as Graham said, it took us a couple of years before we took the leap of faith or the risk to quit our jobs. And it was a bit of a battle between both of us, because we both have, you know, we're both entrepreneurs at heart. We both, you know, we were desperate to succeed. And Graham was saying, well, I'll quit my job and focus on the business and you stay in mainstream employment. I was like, no, if we're going to do this, we do it together. So we both quit our jobs on the same day with no properties at that time. We had enough money to live off for 6 months. And then we started sourcing, you know, deal flow. And then we bought our first property in the 2008 crash in the March. And then we just continued to buy from there on in.
So you left the corporate world before the crash?
It would, yeah, so basically right at the start cash. Of it. Yeah, right at the start of it.
But you had money saved, I'm guessing, or
no, we had money to put in at that time. We had zero money. We had enough money to live off financially for 6 months. So we had to get a deal, and we had to get a good deal and to be able to refinance it quickly in order to take some of the equity out to allow us to keep going, keep working until we built up enough cash flow. And we had a plan that we wanted to be financially free within 3 years was the plan, but we actually became financially free within 12 months.
So the properties that you were purchasing were cash flowing then, right? The property.
And I'm a big believer, Vinny, of, you know, in the corporate world, I was always a buyer. So you buy well, you make more money when you buy.
Yeah.
Rather than when you sell. So, I mean, that was a huge part of our criteria, buying well, cash flowing properties with a bit of equity in it.
Do you recall by chance? I mean, I'm in the California, San Diego market, and buying a property that cash flows, unless you get a crazy off-market deal, is a rarity. But do you remember back then in 2008 what you were looking at, like, numbers-wise?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have three criteria to this day. It needs to give us something on day one. It doesn't matter how much. So when we're funding it or financing it, we need to have something on day one for our time to get the deal done. So it could be a small amount, it could be just a thousand, a few thousand, doesn't matter. But we like to get paid something on day one. So the way do you finance the deal, for our efforts in bringing the deal, we need to be in our mindset that we'll take something at the start. It must cash flow. Every month, it has to cash flow. Didn't have to be a lot. It could have been £50 or $50. As long as it cash flowed, and we were fine with that. We didn't get too hung up on ROI or anything. And we had to be able to refinance out of it quickly in order to get to infinite return on our investment. And therefore then, but with equity in at the end. So a bit now, money during the course of the investment, and everything saved up in terms of the equity at the end. So we were really looking in the UK, you know, outside London, and most of the areas within the UK. You know, London's a very much a capital growth market. I'm aware of California, and you know the how expensive it is there nowadays. You know, but we were very much looking at anything. Traditionally, it would be anything 10, 12, 13% yield. But we didn't get so hung up on yield because we were looking at how quickly we can get our money back. How quickly can we refinance it? So in the early days, you were able to refinance in the UK. I mean, at the very start, you were able to do it in the same day. Now, that quickly stopped as the markets finance tightened up. Then you were able to do it within a few weeks and a few months. Now it's longer and all that stuff. So that was just how it was at the time, and we had to adapt to the changing financial market, but we just done it. And to be honest, you know, we actually only caught the tail end of the of what I call the halcyon days. You know, we should have started years earlier and we'd have been miles ahead. But anyway, we caught the end of it and we just kept going. We were able to recycle the money. So it wasn't, we didn't get too hung up on yield, provided we can get our money back quickly, and we had no money in the deal
plus
the cash flow, we were moving on.
So these were mostly distressed properties that didn't need too much work to fix up.
Yeah. Now, again, we go back to medium cow, fat cow. We didn't buy, we didn't do new build. We have done that over the years, but traditionally we buy existing where it could be light refurb, light maintenance, you know, just cosmetic stuff where required. So it wasn't heavy refurbishment stuck in planning and building warrants and all that. We didn't want that. We needed to, it needed a cash flow quickly. So that was our criteria at the time.
Did you pay contractors or did you do the work yourself?
Oh, listen, I can't even wire a plug. So there's no chance of me doing the work. Yeah, we'd pay guys, but it wasn't like major contractors because it was only light refurb work. So it was small firms that worked with us. Actually, I still work for us to this day, you know, a number of them.
So when you're going through some light buy and hold work, right, on some properties out there, and you're dating at that time, but it made the relationship stronger. I know some people that partner up together, it can actually make it a little more hectic.
Yeah.
How did that kind of work out working with your significant other in buying and holding? There's probably stress going on. How did that work out in the early days?
Well, as Graham said, we met at work, so we always worked together. But when we started our own company, I always say we know our own lane, so we stay in our own lane. So I know what I'm good at, and Graham knows what he's good at, and we support each other in our roles. But we, you know, sometimes Graham will come into my lane, and I'll say, get out my lane, do what you're good at. So we have got really defined roles within the business, you know. So I might negotiate the deal to a certain part, then Graham deals with the finance and maybe the accounting side, and then I'll make sure the properties are well managed and the money's coming in at the end.
Yeah, I think having the different lanes is a huge thing from what I heard from a lot of different partnerships. Do you have and I've heard different partners have these rules where you can't talk about business at the when you're eating a meal or anything like that? It's no.
We speak about business all the time, and you know, we just, I always say there's no work-life balance. We don't even think about it like that. Our life is one. So, you know, the kids are involved now. They're getting older, so they're, you know, getting involved in things. And even when they were younger, we took them traveling all over the world, wherever we were going. And it's just been a part of life for us. So there's not a work life or a family life. It's just combined for us.
Do you think there will ever be a point in time in your life where there will be like a defined two separations? Or is that kind of like, you guys have that balancing act that you're feel comfortable where it's all come together?
Never. I don't know why you would want, you only have one life. And for us, we'll never retire. We have no plans on retiring. We love what we do. We love the people we meet and the things that we do. And it's part of us and our life and our kids' lives. And so I don't, that's actually the polar opposite of what's real. And what we firmly believe, Vinny, by having that, you don't have these arguments about you can't talk about shop or work, you know, at the dinner table and all that. Why? Why not? What's the, that's a massive part of what it is, and the people you meet, and the things that have been done that day. Why wouldn't you? I find that that's really alien to us. And and because we don't have that, you know, we argue, but we don't argue about that stuff. You know, that's not something that's...
I'm a big believer that your work puts the dinner on the table. So if you can't speak about what's putting the dinner on the table, you know, there's a problem. But Graeme and I, you know, we're problem solvers. We bounce out our bed in the morning. So every morning we go for a walk, and that's our morning meeting. And it's brilliant, you know, because we just chew the fat. We walk about, you know, what problems are we solving today? What are we facing? What have we got on? What are we looking forward to? And it's great. It's a great part of the day. It just sets you up for what we're going to deal with.
And then what? So you're getting a strong steam on basically the real estate. When did it come to the point in time where you started looking to invest in other branches?
I think that's a great question, Matt. I think we probably stayed too long in the single family acquisitions. You know, the old adage, start small, take small steps, you know, find your feet and all that stuff. You know, we think the opposite now. We it held us back, that kind of playing it safe too long. We weren't making super progress as much as we wanted. You know, our ambitions today were nothing like they were then, of course. We just wanted to be financially free and, you know, be able to quit our jobs and have a decent life. Now we've got massive aspirations. So what that wasn't giving us our new goals and our new ambitions. You know, we're trying to work out, you know, we'll be here forever, you know, doing this. We need to up our game. We need to bigger numbers. We need to play bigger. We can do far better. So we started looking at businesses and business opportunities, and the principles pretty much are the same. You know, you're applying the same principle. And I think there are quirks between the UK real estate market, for example, than the US. It's a lot, you know, even commercial residential properties, the way that they're underwritten, valued, are different in the UK to the US, where everything's driven very much, and the value can be driven and increased through increased income, resi income. In the UK, it's still very much looked upon as an asset value, not on based on income, on residential, commercial different, but on residential. So it's very tough, you know, it's very tough. And in actual fact, we built up, in normal circumstances, the more you buy, the higher the value you would sell at the end, because the higher the income and all that stuff. Not necessarily the case in the UK. So we kind of had got ourselves in a position where we needed, if we were going to, our goals being bigger, if we were going to deliver them, we needed to diversify and really up our game in terms of numbers and locations and all of that stuff out of the real estate market. Well, still buying. I mean, we own student accommodation, commercial accommodation. We've done developments and all of that stuff over the years. But it was just a natural progression, isn't it? You know, you start with one, then a couple, then a few. Then it's just natural progression. But, yeah, so it was just something that happened. But it was driven more out of a frustration of we weren't growing quickly enough. Just keep continuing doing what we were doing. Well, we're good. We're in decent shape, but we're... You know, there was way more that we wanted to do.
Was there ever a fear of expansion in other locations outside of the UK? I've had different builders in other countries here, and the process of real estate plays a little bit different from country to country, from what I can understand. I mean, was there any kind of fear of that?
Well, no. I mean, I think the fear is in staying still. The fear for us was staying still and not doing it. You know, I'd much rather go and gamble, buy a house, you know, down here in Spain, for example, when a house in Spain, and go through the process and understand it and learn it, rather than just stand on the sidelines and be fearful. But we've been like that since day one.
I think that's a part that we enjoy, is the education and the learning, the new ways, you know, the new rules of the country, or the new... You know, today, for instance, we're looking at buying a business in Spain here. We've just sat with an accountant for the last 2 hours, you know, learning all the different rules and regulations here. And that excites me, because you are learning something new and you're growing. So I think more people have got it's maybe not the fear, it's the laziness that they can't be bothered going to learn and you know, speak to these people that can teach you and keep you right.
You know, business is getting done everywhere, and it always in all these countries that people are fearful of, there's clearly business getting done. They're right to be aware of it. I think for us, given that we, you know, if it's going to be your only investment, then I can understand that. You know, if you can't afford to maybe lose a bit of money on some, I can understand that. So we're not in that position now whereby we can afford to take some hits. But I remember our neighbours years ago, they bought just two off-market apartments in Bulgaria. You know, they'd never set foot in Bulgaria before. They'd been sold this dream. And it turned into an absolute nightmare for them. You know, they had no clip. They weren't finished for years and years and years. And the guy was an air ambulance guy. He knew nothing about the real estate market. Someone had told them something. So I get the horror stories, because it sounded incredible to me that someone would just buy that off a piece of paper on somebody's recommendation. Anyway, we would go and really do our homework on that before we dived into it.
Have you bought property, let's say, in Australia?
No.
Okay.
No.
So let's say hypothetically you have this inkling, you have this want to buy a property in Australia, right? Mm-hmm. What would be the process? What would you do starting today?
We would contact someone that is buying or bought properties in Australia, or someone that is very active in that field. That
would How would you find that person?
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can easily just go on Google, LinkedIn or something like that. But we've got connections in Australia. I would immediately contact my friends in Australia, the people that we know, that we've done business with over the years. That's the first thing I would do.
And then from there, try to get basically, because you talked about an accountant in Spain, right? So you find an accountant out there, or what other like things would you look for?
We always seek advisors in the country that are the best in the sector that we are looking at. So whether it be property or business, who's doing what we want to do or where we want to be?
Yeah.
Right. We wouldn't take advice from someone who hasn't bought a business in Spain, for instance. Do you know what I mean? So we're always seeking the best advisors in the area or sector that we're looking to buy in.
And then how long of a process of education before you actually take the plunge would you usually say?
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, obviously, we're experienced now, maybe not in that country, but we will listen to the advice of the local advisors down there. And it wouldn't really take as long. You know, if it made sense, the numbers made sense, we did it. We're not the type to procrastinate. You know, I think the longer it goes on, the less likely you are to do a lot of these deals. So if we were serious, which was your question, and we really wanted to do it, it wouldn't take us long at all. It would take us weeks.
So to get back, so I know we talked about kind of like expanding outside of your sector of single family, expanding outside of the sector of the UK, and then what about like businesses? Because we talked about basically those middle-sized cows to the fat cows, right? So when did you start thinking, okay, well, we can help these businesses grow to take them to the next level? When did that kind of come about?
Well, it came about when we were looking to grow. I think in fragmented markets, what we've seen is a number of SME businesses that had, where owners had plateaued. They'd reach a point, you know, they were struggling maybe either financially, they were struggling just time, you know, resource. They'd run out of ideas, maybe just weary, battle weary over the years, and the businesses had plateaued. But the sector, and it's the sector we look at first rather than the individual businesses, that sector that's fragmented, that there's opportunity and there can be consolidation in that, where we can, where the sum of the parts are greater than the whole. Can we consolidate these with a look to, you know, adding value to the individual companies because they're part of a larger group? So what we've seen over the years with people that we've knew, people that have run businesses that have been successful but have hit a ceiling, and we're saying, but the opportunity is available to them, but they were just tied financially, let's say, or time, or had just been battle weary.
So was it mostly, when it first started in those spaces, mostly a monetary aspect where you're providing funds to actually get into that next level? Or was it educational based when it first started?
A bit of both. And just to go back to, you know, a lot of the companies that we see or the sectors that we work in, they're too busy on the tools and they've not got the business head. So they don't know how to take that business to the next stage because they're too busy working mm-hmm. in the job or in the business. Mm-hmm. So we come in and we provide, you know, like legal help, business head, accountancy, structure. You know, all more structure in the company, the stuff that they're lacking. And if it's funds, it's funds. So every business is unique.
It is a hybrid. So, I mean, a lot of people that approach us today are not looking just for money. I mean, it's helpful for them in order to grow, but they're doing okay as they are. They're aware that they need more structure in their business. They need more marketing. They need more legal support for growth. You know, HR with employment issues and all that stuff. So our team provide that back office support and structure and there that allows people to go out and do what they do well, which is they're very good at running their business, but they're so tied up in the back office stuff. We provide that then, and they know good opportunities in their sector for either acquisition or to join, partner with, and all that stuff. They're just not enough hours in the day. We allow them, we free up time and allow them to get to go and capitalize on the opportunities that are in their sector.
Well, when it first happened, though, was it a happenstance? Was it kind of like, hey, we have a friend over here, they have a business and we saw it and then expanded? Or did you make a conscious effort to say, hey, we have these funds because we've been doing really well in the real estate space. Mm-hmm. Let's basically expand this into.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly what happened. Yeah, we were looking to apply funds into that space. But we built up a good reputation in the real estate business. We were one of the largest, if not the largest, independent residential real estate owners in Scotland, for example. So we built that reputation up. We're well known, good profile. And so that helped, you know, the profile helped us when we were out looking at businesses that had, like I said, were decent, well-run businesses, but they just got stuck. And for them to be part of a larger group just made sense. They were able to take some cash off the table now, but still be part of something and for the future.
Well, thank you so much, Graham and Leanne. If people are listening and they think they have a company that could fit the criteria, is there actually on your website the criteria, or is it more of they just have to reach out to you?
Yeah, they just put it in. I think they just put their details in on the size and someone will get back to them quickly.
Okay, and that's the best way is going to the website?
Go to the website, yep, or they can contact us directly on LinkedIn, graham.carling and leanne.carling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then that's probably the best way on LinkedIn to, like, if you guys are putting out a book in the future or anything like that, the best way to know. Okay. Thank you guys so much. One last question. If we're talking in 5 years from now, where do you see yourself, the company, or your kids going to be taking over in the very near future? What does that look like?
Well, kids, actually, I mean, Leanne was talking about the businesses today. Our son's 16 and that's him buying his first business now. So we're actually here for him through that. So yeah, I think some of the stuff we get involved in, I think he thinks is a bit old school. So I don't think he's got much motivation to follow in the stuff that we do his path, but he's very much an entrepreneur and ambitious and wants to do his own thing. So we're enjoying that for him at the moment. He'll be part of our businesses until he flies his own, his own wings, if you like. But for us, we will be doing more of the same. International business, traveling the world, working with partners, growing our businesses. And I think ultimately we will continue to expand into other countries that we are not yet operating in and enjoy the process of doing it also. I'm working with some great partners. We've met some great people over the years. Yeah.
No, just matching what Graham says. And we always forget, we've got a 13-year-old daughter and she doesn't want to take over the business, but she does have an entrepreneurial mind. But she's more into like horse riding bits and show jumping and how am I going to raise funds to buy as many horses as I can to compete in as many countries as I can. So she's already thinking, you know, what can I get involved in? But I think as Graham says, they're like, oh, your businesses are old school. You know, they're wanting to do more modern stuff. AI tech.
Well, yeah, the if she's into horses, that's an expensive cost. My wife's into horses, and that's a so good luck to you two on that. Well, thank you guys for being on the Road to Growth podcast. Hopefully everyone listening got some great nuggets. Please, please go in the show notes. Go find Leanne and Graham. Take a look at their information. And yeah, have a great one. Anything's possible.
Thank you for listening to The Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur. Please like, subscribe, and stay connected. Visit www.theenriquezgroup.com.
Yeah, I created a website.
Hope to see you again next week. The Enriquez Group, signing off.